FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. Happy New Year. It's January 2nd, 2018. Well, Danielle Park's been on vacation a bit, but she's gone to warmer climes, had enough Canadian winter for a lifetime probably, but what about the winter that could potentially be setting upon the financial markets soon? Oh, by the way, email us, be part of the show, kl@carrielutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz. So is there a winter that's finally going to kill all of the flowers, all of the beautiful blossoming stocks that have gone to the moon? Well, Danielle Park is with us now. Danielle, welcome to Sunshine.
Hey, happy new year to you, Carrie.
Hey, well, likewise. So what of it here? We've got an article on your blog, One Word for Stock Valuations as We Enter 2018. Breathtaking.
Yeah, breathtaking for sure. It's, price is what you pay, value is what you get. Well, at these prices, the value you're getting is the second worst ever in the last 200 years. So that just tells you, and I find it fascinating because there's so much talk about the new tax cuts in the Trump bill coming in and being stimulative of giving corporations more money to buy back their shares with, which is, supposedly a good thing. And you've got much hope for a rebound in economic activity, and all that's great. But the price you're paying for the notional earnings that you're expecting dictates the value you're going to receive for that investment. You have to look at what the cash flows are going to be flowing from your parting with your capital, what you're hoping to gain. And when you're talking about the second highest valuations ever, as shown in that average of four valuation indicators, the 87 percentile was in the October of 29 before the crash. March of 2000 was at 155% in terms of standard deviation of all those indicators. And today we're, second only to that. So we've never stayed, as you can see on that chart, Carrie, we've never been able to stay in that range for more than a few months maximum. We've been in them now for this particular cycle for already longer than the norm. So it's certainly 2018 is going to be a make or break in many ways. It's going to be a break of people, a flogging of people who are concerned about valuation, or it's going to be a flogging of those who aren't, because we're in two really extreme camps today. Those who could capitulate and join in and throw away their measuring and stop worrying about losses have done so. And those who are not prepared to do that are, just as resolute that they're not prepared to do that. And so you've got these really two diverse camps.
Yeah, well, hey, if you want to see this chart that we're talking about, just go over to jugglingdynamite.com. And depending when you're listening to this, just do a search, one word for stock valuations. That'll take you right to the article. And then you can see the chart yourself. It's quite breathtaking, I will say that. But you know the old saw, Danielle, the market can remain irrational a lot longer than you can remain solvent.
Mm-hmm. Which goes back to the issue of leverage. That quote is directly related to the amount of leverage people are taking on to make these bets. So in other words, if you've borrowed stocks to sell them short in the expectation that they're falling and they've continued to rage higher, then you are going broke because you're now having to cover your borrowings and you're burning through capital. And we've seen many people who've been trying to play the short game of this market for the past few years, either go under, close their doors, or just cash out and go to the sidelines and say, I can't figure out when this is going to turn. By the same token, though, if you look down, Carrie, the other article that I put below that one we've just mentioned about source of funds, that source of funds defines the depth of the mean reversion cycle that follows. So, for example, we had prolific leverage borrowing to buy securities in 1929, and we had a good deal of that in 2000 as well. And yet, when you look at those two market peaks relative to the borrowing that's gone on against security portfolios this cycle, it is, you know, breathtaking once more. I mean, it's unprecedented, the negative balance that people have taken on. And the reason for that is not just to buy securities, let's not forget. They have borrowed against their rising security portfolios to fund their lifestyle, to buy things like, you know, whatever goods and services they're wanting to accumulate. I'll bet you dollars to donuts, there's people out there who borrowed against their securities portfolio in December to buy Christmas presents, because the logic is always the same in these super credit abusing cycles. They think, well, why would I sell the assets? The assets are going straight up. So if I need cash, I'll just borrow against them. And therein lies the rub, because when everyone's borrowing against these highly overvalued assets with no cash on hand, just debt and lines of credit and access to credit, what happens is eventually, unless they're going to get big jumps in their income, they're going to need cash. Either by cashing out, selling things to pay down debt, or they're going to need to have cash flow to pay down debt. And ultimately, they all start needing that cash at the same time, which means you get these panic selling waves. And that's that, you know, the market can go on the downside longer than any of these people will be able to remain solvent, which forces them to sell and sell as prices plunge. And that's what we've seen in all previous market bottoms. And that's why this one is so extreme and vulnerable to the downside now, just because it's been so extreme to the upside and because the borrowing has been so extreme to the upside. So, you know, that should that quote should really, as you're wise to raise it, it should really stick in the minds. You know, can I wait this thing out if I have no debt and no leverage? Of course I can. I'll just wait this thing out. It's the people who have put on all this credit or been spending beyond their means and have taken on all the consumer debt, or the corporations who have borrowed like crazy in the past few years to buy back their own shares. Once those shares start to drop in value, the debt does not. They're sitting there with the debt and these plunging asset prices, and that's how you implode net worth. And that's how you get a liquidity crunch, which I fully believe is coming.
Yeah, well, you know, you got to wonder, Danielle, when people start heading for the exits, where's the money head? Obviously, it's going to head into treasuries, so-called safe vehicles, you know, with very little risk, but it's going to go into other things too. So where do you foresee the money going when this flood, this liquidity driven event occurs?
Well, first of all, it goes to cover debt. It'll go to cover margin. So it doesn't need to come out of stocks and go into another asset class to the extent that it's paying off more borrowed funds. So that's one thing. Mm-hmm. And paying off consumer debt and all the leveraging corporations, retiring debt, it can just go back into, as I say, paying off that rather than actually buying other asset classes. So that's the first thing. Secondly, yeah, it goes to the deepest, most liquid pools in a credit crunch. So it'll go to the most widely held bond markets and currencies. So typically that's treasuries, that's the US dollar, you know, that's things like the yen, that's things like the euro, the deepest, widest currency markets, so that people have liquidity, but also because that's what the living expenses and debts in the world are denominated in. As we've discussed before, Carrie, people owe the money in these other currencies and they have to get the cash to pay for their living expenses. So they don't do that in, you know, like corporate bonds. They don't pay for things even in cryptocurrencies for the most part. They're still, that cryptocurrency market is a tiny fraction of the debt outstanding. And that's why, you know, they don't even pay it in bullion. That may be seen as a safe place to park some of your actual savings. But if you need money to pay your bills, you're not going to be putting it in that. You're going to be paying down debt. And that's why, you know, again, it's been this episode of extreme leveraging. And I always say, you know, we know that most people have not had wage gains to keep up with the spending and inflation of asset prices and housing, for example, and education and that sort of thing. So they have not been able to keep up except by borrowing money. And so for that reason, I you know, even your latest tax bill, you know, the optimism about it, the reality is no fiscal conservatives should support a bill that allows more cash to flow into stock buybacks at the expense of the debt. you're talking about increasing the national deficit, which increases the debt drag, which slows down the economy long term. So it just, you know, debt on debt on debt. I mean, it's a house of cards, and it's fragile no matter what people say, no matter how confident they may feel. You know, humans are notoriously overconfident, just as the house of cards is the most fragile. So, you know, you can say, well, you've been saying that a long time. Yeah, well, you look at that chart, NYSE credit and the market. Forgive me, but I didn't realize that we would be that batshit crazy this time. I agree. It's gone on about 5 years longer than I thought possible, thanks to QE and central banks and, you know, indiscriminate injections. But if we are going to look back on the 2007-08 peak and call it the great financial crisis, the great credit crisis, then surely we must now look at present levels and at least lose our words for a moment in trying to describe the extremity of this overshoot, this cycle.
Yeah, it is quite stupefying. Looking at those charts really tells the story. And it always ends the same way. It's just, I guess, not so much how people react, but rather that they believe, that they can really believe, that you really think that this time is really different. And this time never is different.
That's well, the speculative mania. I mean, you've got such, it's just everywhere right now. And the least enlightened and the most reckless look like geniuses in this environment. And that's also very degrading of the strength of a society, frankly, because the wrong leaders are given, you know, decision-making powers. And that's always a catastrophic event because it ends in tragedy the same way. I mean, you know, people have been borrowing against their houses to buy Bitcoin. They've been borrowing on credit cards to buy Bitcoin. In Canada, people have been borrowing on their lines of credit to advance funds to other people to have down payments on the most expensive real estate in the world in some of our markets. So, yes. You know, it's that, you know, why wouldn't you borrow on your line of credit and give it to someone else who has terrible credit so that they can give you an interest spread? Well, because they probably won't ever be able to pay you back. And when you want to call in that loan, you won't be able to get the cash. And if they can't roll over, this is your U.S. subprime crisis 2006 all over again. If they can't get the cash to roll over their debt because no one will advance it to them because they're a bad credit, right. You know, or because credit is shrinking, which is happening in 2018. We all know that the central banks have already begun their, quote, taper, you know, quantitative tapering. There's an anticipated $1 trillion of liquidity coming out just on that alone from the financial system, you know, and those, you know, that's the liquidity that drove this credit binge. And that liquidity is coming back out. That means it's going to be harder for people to access capital, to roll over debt, to keep extending their lines of credit and margin. And that's when you're going to hit this like hard return where everyone's interested in cash. And we know from all the cash level reports of every kind that we follow that the cash levels have never been lower in institutions, in mutual funds, in individual investors. And like I say, in portfolios or brokerage accounts, we can see from that chart, it's never been lower. There's never been more, less liquidity available.
Well, if I wanted to be a tease, I'd say, well, when is all this going to happen, Danielle? But obviously, we don't know the answer to that. It's impossible for you to know, other than to know that it's inevitable.
Yeah, well, other than to know, you know, I guess you could say, well, when's it going to happen? But that's not really the question. The question is, what do we do individually in response to such extreme conditions? Mm-hmm. So many people have decided they're going to play along, keep dancing as long as the music's playing, as old Chuck Prince once said. And you know what? If you're an institution that's guaranteed to be bailed out by your government, at least if that's what you feel confident in because of your lobbyist dollars and connections and politicians in your pockets and all that good stuff, maybe, you know, in a completely maniacal mentality, you may think that that makes perfect sense. For individuals, though, unless you feel that you're impermeable to loss and bankruptcy, that you too will be bailed out by some unknown power, then, you know, you have to make more sobering choices. It's like that old, you know, if everyone was jumping off a bridge, would you do it too, Carrie, that your mom used to say to you, right? If everyone's jumping off a bridge.
I heard it a few times.
Right? Are you going to do it? And that's more the question. The question is not how long does this go on for? How long is the unsustainable, you know, rigged along? The question is, what is your personal response? And how do you prepare? Given the preponderance of evidence, which suggests that this will eventually come back down and that things will go on fire sale, the question is, who will be prepared? That's really the question. And these people that are in up to their eyebrows are the antithesis of prepared. So that means that, you know, thinking people must consider what that portends from here.
Hey, so do you think they're really going to bail everybody out again? Under Dodd-Frank, I didn't think they were supposed to do that. You have bail-ins, but is everybody going to get bailed out? Or are they just going to get scared again?
Well, the correct thing to do would be to elect the so-called investors who have actually been speculators go down on their sword. That means the equity of institutions that fail should be consumed, that the debt holders should take their lumps. That means senior bond holders, everybody should take, as contract law suggests, as bankruptcy law lays out in advance, all that should be allowed to absorb the losses before any deposit holders are even taken into consideration. And at that point, you've got, you know, some government-backed guarantees of some of the portion of deposits. Right. So I think the correct thing is what they need to do is let investors take their hit. And hopefully that will still offer some buffer to deposit holders. But at the end of the day, that's going to be the question. I think they're going to have to protect deposits, but I don't think that they will have the funds to protect investors like they're, or speculators, more to the point, as they did in 2008.
Well, you know, it's going to be a hell of a storm if what you're saying actually comes to pass. Yeah, of course, the depositors should be the most senior creditors. In fact, they shouldn't even be considered creditors of a financial institution. If you have a bank account there, you should be considered, it should be considered your property, and they're holding it in trust for you. But the law has changed since then. But short of a revolution, if they were to not protect depositors, something's going to have to be done. And will anyone have the guts to stick it to Wall Street? Well, I think people have seen very bad things happen to their lives who've taken on Wall Street for a lot less than watching them really hit the skids. Ideally, what should have been done, in my opinion, Danielle, in 08, 09, was simply take all the too big to fail banks who were then, you know, just getting too big to fail, put them into conservatorships, protect the depositors, and let everything else be unwound through the market. And let the chips fall where they may. But I think they allowed that to happen with Lehman. And when they saw the results, they were looking over the precipice. But really, the way to do it is just to protect those depositors and everyone else be damned. Because you can't have everybody's bank account disappear. That's going to have a disastrous effect. We saw that in the Great Depression. Depositors have to be protected. But everyone else should be on the block.
Yeah, because it's not savings if it's been speculating. That's the thing. You can't have savings like protection for taking reckless risk. And that's where we went wrong in the past 20 years. By repeatedly bailing out speculation, you've shifted the entire economy and social preoccupation of people to this obsession with gambling and non-productive gambling. I've had a few articles I've been putting on the blog just in the last week, but you know, just talking about the cost of the wrong type of debt. When you keep incenting people to take on non-productive leverage and debt, you end up with massive holes in sustainability, in savings pools, which are essential to the functioning of the economy, in infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You know, all these tax cuts they've been handing out in the U.S., they're going to come, you know, now they're starting to talk about, wait a minute, that was all lovely before Christmas. Let's get it through. Let's go out on a high note. Now it's like, wait a minute, how do we pay for for this? Right. How do you pay for this?
They never worry about that. You know that. They never worry about paying.
Well, at some point, you know, they run out of it's like, everyone's known for a long time that this has been unsustainable. But at some point, it's hard to even keep a straight face when you're perpetuating the type of, madness that has been endorsed by financial leaders, by politicians. And unless you can hide zeros like they did at Enron for a while, and then we all know how that happened, if you can't put everything off balance sheet, at some point that's on your balance sheet. And then, bail out with what? What money will they use next time to bail out all this? I mean, it's sublime to ridiculous.
That's the $64 billion, trillion-dollar question.
Come on now. We must be quadrillion now.
Well, we don't even know because of all those lovely derivatives. And we got to go, but check out Danielle's work over at jugglingdynamite.com. See ours, Financial Survival Network, Twitter feed at Carrie Lutz, and the Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Danielle, enjoy the warm weather, and we'll catch up with you in a couple weeks.
Thanks, Carrie.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.